Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. My guest today, retired Army Colonel Edna Cummings, was the first African-American woman to earn her commission as an Army officer through the Army Reserve Officer Training Corps Program, or AROTC, at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. As an Army officer, she received the Defense Superior Service Medal, Meritorious Service Medals, three of them, an Army Commendation Awards, four of those, Joint Service Commendation Award, the Army Superior Unit Reserve Forces Medal, Overseas Service Ribbon, and the Defense Service Medal. And along with all those awards, in 2020, Colonel Cummings was inducted into the Army Women's Foundation Hall of Fame, and the Military Officers Association of America has selected her as one of its national changemakers. But while all those achievements are impressive, that's not why we're having her on the show today. Since 2018, Colonel Cummings has worked to bring recognition to an all-black World War II Women's Army Corps unit, the 6888th Central Postal Directory Battalion, also known as the 6888. Working as a private citizen, she raised funds for a 6888th monument and also co-produced an award-winning documentary about the unit. She then championed the effort with Congress to pass the 6888 Congressional Gold Medal Act. And in March 2022, President Biden signed the legislation into law awarding the 6888th unit the nation's highest civilian honor, the Congressional Gold Medal. Now, our listeners might reasonably be wondering, what is a Central Postal Directory Battalion, and what was it doing in the Army during World War II? Well, it turns out they were doing something pretty remarkable. So why don't you tell us their story, Colonel Cummings?
Well, first of all, Court, thank you so very much for having me on your show to talk about one of my favorite topics ever, and that's the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion. Very good question. What is the Postal Directory Battalion? The name describes it all. It directs the mail. Some people think the 6888 delivered mail, but just think of the post office as we know now. Mm-hmm. Before automation, the mail had to be manually routed somewhere. And that somewhere in World War II, that place was the front lines to our troops. So just think about you being away from home, in the military, on the front lines, and no one has heard from you in over a year. Can you imagine what that does to the morale of the families at home and the troops on the front line? And so that's what the 6888 did. They routed the mail to the front line troops and to Americans. And what I learned since doing this project, the Army is in charge of the mail no matter where we are in the military, overseas, within the U.S., so the Army's in charge of the military mail, so this was an Army mission.
Yeah, so there were something like 7 million service people overseas in Europe at that time. And I mean, African-American men have been serving in the U.S. military since the American Revolution. And during the Civil War, actually about 10% of Union soldiers were black. But this was the first battalion of African-American women ever to serve in the U.S. military overseas. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And it was actually 7 million Americans, because you had diplomats, Red Cross workers, federal employees. Mm. So the 6888 handled some of the mail, not only for troops, but for anyone in the theater. But the focus was the troops on the front lines.
Yeah. So for like 2 years, I was reading mail had been backlogged and piling up in warehouses, largely in England, I guess. And you don't think of mail as being something so important during a raging conflict on foreign soil. But like you said, it's actually vital to the morale of troops who are far from home and attacking and being attacked and seeing their fellow soldiers dying around them and living in awful conditions. So it's your lifeline to normalcy and knowing there's something to come back to if you can just survive. So the work these ladies were doing in getting millions of pieces of mail moving again was really vital to the war effort. It's not some trivial thing like just getting the mail delivered. It was a big deal, right? So how many of them were there in all?
Well, it's approximately 855 women on the 6888 roster, and they went over in waves. The first group went over to Europe on the Ile-de-France, which was a commercial passenger ship converted to a troop ship that not only carried the 6888, but other troops. And all these troop ships had to zigzag to avoid detection by the Germans, the U-boats, when they were going over to the U.K., So 855 women went over in waves. First wave was about 750 women, and then the other ones followed. So those women had to set up a small city in a war-torn environment in Birmingham, England. They arrived in Scotland, in Glasgow, Scotland, and then took a train to Birmingham, England. It's called Birmingham, England, not Birmingham, so that's why I'm saying Birmingham. I learned that I went to Birmingham quite a few times and was corrected by our brethren in the UK. It's not Birmingham, it's Birmingham. And it was an old school, King Edward School for Boys in Birmingham, England, where the 6888 set up operations. But that part of England was the main mail distribution center, for lack of a better term, to convey what was going on. That was the hub of postal operations since the war began. So the war had started, of course, D-Day, that's when we got involved. So we had troop movement all along from that point. The 6888 came years afterwards in 1945. So that was a challenge because of fast troop movement. Vehicles that would normally transport the mail had to be used for other reasons. And so it was hard to maintain reliable mail service within the area. So the adjutant general of the army signaled to the army, said, look, we have a problem. So now I ask your listeners to think for a moment, how many times a day do you touch your phone to check your email or to check mail or to receive a text? Or when someone leaves home, someone you care about leaves home, and one of the things I always tell my kids, and my mother still tells me now, let me know when you get there, okay? Suppose that the vital connection is interrupted, and how would you feel if you haven't heard from your loved one or just any contact from someone outside of your immediate environment for a day?
Yeah, and that's just under normal circumstances. But here you're talking about a loved one who's in a war, and you don't know what's going on with them. You don't know if they're alive or dead.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that vital communication had been interrupted. So that's what the 6888 did. Their motto was no mail, low morale. Mm-hmm. So they restored that vital communication to and from the U.S., the troops on the front lines, and the loved ones back home.
And remember, too, this is long before computers, right? So they were doing this strictly by hand, and they're go into a warehouse that's piled to the ceiling with mail that had been sitting there for months, you know, and Christmas packages with food in them, and there's rats going after the food, and and things are sometimes addressed just to John Jones, and there might be 10,000 John Joneses or something, you know, so they're trying to figure out on little 3x5 cards, I guess, something like that, where people were and get them correctly routed and addressed and sent on their way. So it's really a Herculean task, right? So what were their working conditions like? I mean, I think they worked around the clock 7 days a week. And how much work were they getting done in a shift? And what was it generally like overall?
Yeah, well, the working conditions, again, this was a wartime environment. So they were in the communication zone or back in the rear. But they had to work in blackout conditions. And the mail was stored in warehouses and airplane hangars. I mean, you're talking some estimates, I would say up to 17 million pieces of mail and packages. So the mail would come from these warehouses and hangars into some type of building that blackout conditions, you know, cold, dark. And so the women had to work in a secure environment, secure meaning because they did not want to be detected by the Germans. Because the nation was still at war, so blackout conditions, meaning there were some type of covering over the window so they could not be detected. And they processed upwards of 65,000 pieces of mail and packages per shift. And a shift is approximately 8 hours because I work shift work in the Army in operations centers. So a shift could be 8 to 10 hours because you come in, you have to tell the person you're relieving what's going on. And by the time you leave, it could be 8 hours, it could be 9 hours or whatever. But it was a round-the-clock operation, 65,000 pieces of mail and packages per shift, approximately 195,000 pieces of mail and packages per day for about 90 days. And so within 90 days, the 6888 had cleared this massive mail backlog. The Army thought it would take 6 months. So the 6888 reduced the backlog in half that time. And other units had been assigned that task before the 6888 arrived. You had local civilians who had been working in the warehouses. You had other military units, to include other WACS, Women Army Corps members, that mm-hmm. were non-African American. Because of segregation, the 6AAA had to set up their own facilities. It was segregated within the military by race and gender. And this was an all-Black unit.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, then the Army aligned with the U.S. policy on segregation at that time. But what was interesting, the locals, the U.K., did not support segregation. They mm-hmm. welcomed the women. They had freedom of movement and experienced freedoms overseas that they did not experience in the U.S.
Yeah, that's right. So, well, here you've got a very large group of Black women, almost all of whom had never had anything to do with moving mail before and the postal mm-hmm. service and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. just in general, how did they organize to accomplish such a huge feat so fast and so well?
Well, the organization was under the leadership of a 26-year-old woman named Charity Edna Adams. And that drew me to the story because I read about a Black woman colonel's name was Edna.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very impressive because she said things sometimes that she wished she would not have said. And we'll get to that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But under her leadership, she task organized because all of the women did not work in the mail operations because of segregation. They had little support from the military with regards to access to facilities such as dining facilities, PX and commissary, in other words, shopping privileges within the military. So they had to set up a small city, even hair salons, because of the texture of African-American women's hair. Charity Adams ensured that the morale of her unit was taken care of, as well as taking care of the morale of the troops on the front line. Mm-hmm. So the women set up motor pool operations. They repaired their own vehicles. They cooked their own food. So everything the women needed to be self-sufficient or self-sustaining, they had to do it themselves. And that's what Charity Adams did. I had the opportunity to read her journal. And her thought process at 26 years old was very, very deliberate. What are the things that the troops need in order to perform at maximum capacity or maximum operations? Because her goal was to maximize throughput the mail.
Yeah, I've read about her and seen pictures of her. She's a striking looking young woman and highly intelligent and, college degree and, just a really superb person, but, they're operating under what used to be called separate but equal, right? So they had to, as you were describing, they had to do everything for themselves and set up a beauty parlor, which would not normally be something an Army unit would need to do. they had to make everything for themselves to support their own needs. And while doing this, as I said earlier, a Herculean task that they were accomplishing. So actually, Charity Edna Adams was the first Black woman officer in the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps, or which was WAC, I guess later became shortened to WAC, right?
That's correct. And she was the first, not because of merit, but because her name started with A. And it was just a coincidence. She's hailed as the first.
Huh.
And her name was
Is that right?
Yes, they were actually that first class of the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. And it was auxiliary because the women did not have military benefits.
Yeah. Huh.
So that was in 1942. And then in 1943, the name, the auxiliary was shortened, well, it was deleted, and it was just Women's Army Corps. And so she'd been in the Army. It was one of the more experienced officers in the Army at the time. So she joined the Army in 1942, graduated, and served at Fort Des Moines, Iowa, and had mm-hmm. a stellar career before the 6AAA as a commander. And one thing about the 6AAA, which has not been discussed, was the intelligence level. They were some of the best and brightest in the nation because the war started, World War II started post-Depression, and the literacy levels in the U.S. were just deplorable, less than probably 60% of the U.S. population had high school diplomas. Mm. And the literacy levels within the military, some of the troops were disqualified because they were could not read. And this is all ethnicities, not just African Americans.
Sure.
So the 6888, 85% were either college graduates or former school teachers.
Wow.
So they were some of the best and the brightest. And the disparity because of gender segregation, women had to have high school diplomas to join the military, and men did not.
Hmm.
And so then that's one segment of the population. So regardless of race, women had to have high school diplomas. So you had a highly educated force within the Women's Army Corps. And then with these black women, all of the black women had high school diplomas. And the 6888 were literally, hands down, some of the best and brightest in the nation. So you had this highly intelligent and capable force that was brought together, force being a battalion-sized unit, to solve a complex problem that no one else had been able to do so. So I think that contributed to their success as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because
sure.
Because Major Adams was also a triple major. You talked about her intelligence. She majored in math, Latin, and physics.
Mm-hmm.
She was in graduate school at Ohio State when she joined the Army. So even without the 6888, this was a brilliant woman.
I mean,
how can someone triple major in math, Latin, and physics? That seems incredible. But she did graduate from Wilberforce, a university in Ohio, and was in grad school for vocational psychology at Ohio State.
I hadn't heard that she was just selected because her name was the first alphabetically. So that was really lucky because she was very well qualified and capable of doing what she did and leading this this large group to accomplish a hard task. I like the story about when a white male general came barging in and demanded to see every member of the unit right then and there. So tell us about that encounter with then Major Adams.
That's a fascinating story. And because I've traveled to Birmingham, England a couple of times and researched the environment about this white male general, I don't know if this was the exact same general, but let's indulge me for a moment and I'll give you my theory about who he was. There'd been an inspector general going around to all of the different mail sites because this was the hub of postal operations within the European theater of operations, Birmingham, England. And I think it was the inspector general. And he had relieved a white major at another site in the region for poor mail operations. So my theory was this was the inspector general who wanted to inspect everything about the postal operations. And so he shows up to the 6888, Major Adams' unit, and says, "All right, Major, where are your troops?" She said, "Sir, I do not have all the troops available for inspection. A third sleeping, third working. So here are the 200 or so I have available." And that wasn't good enough. And he responded by saying, "Well, I'll bring a white officer to show you how it should be run." So basically threatening her to replace her because she would not wake the women up who were sleeping or waking or pull the troops off the mail line. And when he said, "I'll have you replaced by a white officer," she said, "Over my dead body." So keep in mind, this is a major. Regardless of race or gender, majors do not talk to generals that way in the
army. That's right.
Something you don't do. But in her book, she says sometimes your mind has to, her mind operated like a human computer. And before she realized it, she said, "Over my dead body." And that triggered the major, and she knew that she had overstepped by saying that because it was disrespectful. She knew she was wrong, but there was the Articles of War had advised commanders and leaders not to use race as an issue overseas because it could be used by the Germans as propaganda. So the general had violated an article of war, so she was going to drop charges against him for introducing race into the conversation, and he was going to have her disciplined.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way I read it is that first he stormed out and filed charges against her to court-martial her for insubordination.
Right.
And then she, in responding to that, used this article against racial discrimination that you talked about to file countercharges against him as a defense, basically.
Right. They both and had a plan. Right. But at the end of the day, they dropped it. The general dropped the charges. And,
yeah, right.
So, yeah. And what's even more interesting is that the general later contacted her and apologized and said, "You taught me a lot," because she stood her ground, which was something that was uncommon. And usually during World War II, black troops were supervised or led by white officers. So not only was the 6888 unique because it was all black women, not all African-American, because there are women from Puerto Rico who identified as black. A few women were biracial, but didn't even know they were black until they joined the military. They were very fair-skinned, but the birth certificate said colored or Negro. And a lot of women had never realized that they were black. So there was a multi-ethnic group of black women. And so with Charity Adams, it was unique because it was all female, all black, and she was a leader.
Yeah. So, you know, what I read was that he came to see her and he said, you know, every black person I've ever met has either been a servant to me or a subordinate to me in the military. And no one ever speaks to me the way you spoke to me.
Exactly. But
you outsmarted me and you have my respect.
That's right.
And so she kind of played the poker hand and won. So that was pretty cool.
As the hub of operations with mail, it was stored in the warehouse. But before the mail got to the warehouse to be routed and delivered, some of the mail had to be salvaged because there was mail that had been destroyed. I mean, packages, as you discussed earlier, had fallen apart. So that mail had to be sent someplace. Then there was mail that had to be censored. And 6888, to include Charity Adams, involved censoring mail. So that mail had to be sent someplace. So that was part of the larger mail operations, the routing of the mail, either to the troops, to be censored, to be salvaged. And so it was just so much going on within that mail that had been backlogged for upwards of almost 3 years. And the mail had stopped because of the D-Day preparations. Keep in mind, because mail contains a lot of sensitive information, the unit location, soldiers' names, or the troops' names. So if that is intercepted by, you know, the adversary, that could be considered as intelligence. So the security. Yeah. So the mail had been just stopped for a while. So that was the reason for the backlog. And then after D-Day, the Battle of the Bulge and other engagements or operations caused the mail to be slowed down. So it was just a lot going on. But again, mail, that contact is a force multiplier. It's kind of like you wake up and you have a bad day and nothing seems to go well, even though you've done this every day. And all of a sudden you get some good news and things seem better. Mm-hmm. So it boosts morale, you know, no mail, low morale.
Well, we're getting toward the end of the show. We have just a few minutes left, Colonel, but, you know, just to say again about Charity Adams. Later she got married and her name became Charity Adams Early, E-A-R-L-E-Y. And she published a memoir in 1989 called One Woman's Army, which I would recommend to our listeners to get and read, One Woman's Army. So, you know, I mentioned in my introduction the monument to the 6888. So just tell us briefly about that, if you would.
The monument for the 6888 is located at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas in Buffalo Soldier Park. And it was dedicated in 2018 in November. And it was great to have some of the women who were alive at that time to attend that monument dedication. And only two women from the original unit, there'll be no one was still alive. One is 100, Anna Robertson, Milwaukee, and one is 104. Fanny McClendon in Tempe, Arizona. So the monument contains the names of the ones that we could locate. There's about 844 names that were located, and we've located some of the other names since then.
So after the monument was set up, you spearheaded the effort to have the 6888 awarded the Congressional Gold Medal, as I mentioned earlier. And it was done by a unanimous vote of Congress, of all things. I mean, these are people who can hardly agree to go out for a hamburger.
I know. The CCAA brought the nation together. Isn't that
really
amazing? And it's
incredible.
It's the power of veterans, because although I spearheaded the effort, I had hundreds of veterans and veterans organizations and people who wrote letters, made phone calls, and I knocked on doors. At that time, you could just walk in to meet with a member of Congress. So I engaged Congress and their staffers on a personal level to get this legislation passed. And the president actually signed two pieces of legislation about the 6888, the 6888 Congressional Gold Medal, less than 200 ever awarded in our nation's history since 1776. And he also signed legislation for a post office rededication in Buffalo, New York, after a veteran, Indiana Hunt Martin.
So that recognition makes them the only female unit and the only women's army unit and the only African-American female unit ever to receive this award. So that's a pretty cool thing. I'm going to talk here some about your various efforts to make them better known. So there's the 2019 documentary titled The 6888, No Male, Low Morale, which was their motto, and you were involved in making that. And I saw that Fort Lee in Virginia has been renamed Fort Greg Adams, Greg-Adams, and that's after Colonel Adams. And I gather there's a Broadway musical in the works. And now, just before Christmas, there's a Netflix movie called simply The 6888, which is written and directed by Tyler Perry and starring Kerry Washington and Oprah Winfrey. That'll be aired just before Christmas, The 6888. So watch for that. But it's really something that you've been able to get through and pull off with all this. So, you know, you can go to YouTube and search The 6888, No Male, Low Morale. That phrase, 6888, you know, will get you a lot of it. You can see several short excerpts on YouTube from the film. And you can also see a preview of the upcoming Netflix film online. And then the 2019 6888 documentary that I mentioned before is also on Tubi, and it's on Amazon Prime Video. And the University of Virginia Press is scheduled to publish Colonel Cummings' own memoir called A Soldier's Life, A Black Woman's Rise from Army Brat to 6888 Advocate, Army Brat. And so that's Colonel Cummings, C-U-M-M-I-N-G-S. First name is Edna. And it's called A Soldier's Life, and you'll find the rest of it. That's coming in spring 2025, I gather, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, an Army brat. I've been in the Army all my life. So I've always had an ID card. I was born at Wilmette Army Hospital, and my dad was with the 82nd Airborne.
Well, that's great. Your own career has been something special, but you've capped it with making this unit that was little known back in World War II become very well known and more well known as time goes on. So that's really really quite an achievement on your part.
And I'd like to add that there is also an exhibit, a 6888 exhibit at the Army Women's Museum at Fort Greg Adams, and the Smithsonian Museum for African American History and Culture also has mention of the 6888 on the third floor.
So, well, all in all, it's a fascinating story, and you know, I'm glad we had you on here to tell us about it today. Colonel Edna Cummings, and I want to thank you so much for being on with us at American Variety.
Oh, Sheila, thank you.
And thanks to all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.